Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Three Women, Three Ways. We're the radio show that brings you news and a little bit of research and a lot of conversation about the world that we live in. And we look at it from our different perspectives. Today there are two of us. Normally there are three, but we have a person with a different commitment this morning. And Deborah, why don't you start out by introducing yourself?
Well, I'd be pleased to. Good morning, listeners. I'm Deborah Adams. I live in Southwest Washington State in the original Vancouver, and I'm excited to be here. My mantra is I have lived it, I have studied it, and I have worked it. The it I speak of is domestic violence. However, my studies took me beyond only domestic violence to all forms of violence, specifically forms of violence against women. So I am happy to be here this morning. Tell us about you, Heather.
Well, I am just really kind of excited this last few weeks because I have started my dissertation, which is the last step. It's a long step, but it's the last step in getting my PhD in psychology. And I've been working on that for a long time, so I'm kind of excited to be at this point in the process. And I actually come from a media journalism background and have worked in that area my whole life. And about, oh, I guess 12 years ago, I started becoming much more interested in domestic violence. And so I went back, got my master's degree from the University of Colorado, and it was a master's in public administration with a focus on domestic violence. And I've been working off and on toward domestic violence issues ever since. And right now, as I said, I'm working on my PhD, and I'm also doing some public speaking about domestic violence, and wrote a book, and my whole focus is mostly on educating people about this this thing that we call domestic violence. So that's my background, and it's kind of interesting that today we're using our backgrounds and our experience to talk about an issue that is starting to get a little bit more in the media, but not completely, not enough, considering the impact that it has, and that is violence against women who are serving in our military. Deborah, I did a little bit of research, and I found out that, according to the Department of Defense, about 19,000 service women were raped or assaulted in 2009. And they also said there was a 58.5% increase in reported sexual assaults at service academies in 2011. And according to the Department of Defense, only about 13% of assaults are reported.
Yeah.
So, it seems to be quite a problem, and I think there must be some layers to this. Is it just because of the environment of, you know, I mean, we want soldiers to be aggressive and to some extent violent, and so our military encourages that? Or is this a symbol of our greater culture? What's causing all this?
Well, I think that is very interesting because what brought my interest to this was I heard of a documentary called Invisible War, and that has been playing around the nation, and with the research, seeing the video trailers and conversations I've had with other women in the service and other activists in this work, they said that this is not new. This has been an ongoing problem since, you know, women were engaging in military service. So it's important for us to talk about this. And the Invisible War video brings several survivors who come and talk about their experience. And that introduced me to an organization called Service Women Action Network. And that is really a great organization. And I just want to tell you a little bit about them. They have a website. It's called servicewomen.org. Very easy to access. And their background is that they have been around since 2002. Let me get to that background. And they have a hotline for people to call. So their background is since 2007. To provide women veterans with resources and community support to heal their wounds and readjust to society. 2.5 million women serve in the military. There are enormous barriers to equal treatment, equal opportunity, and improved quality of life. So that's basically what drives the Service Women's Action Network. And they say that in U.S. military, women make up about 15%. Of the population. So that's kind of interesting to note as well, don't you think?
I think it's very interesting. So we're dealing with a real minority of women in the military, as we'd probably expect. And since, you know, the information I just got for the Department of Defense is that, you know, 13% of the assaults are reported, so that means that, like, you know, 87% of the assaults are not reported. And I think there's a whole slew of reasons for that. One is that sometimes in the military, if you report a sexual assault, you're kind of blamed for it. And they don't, depending on your commander, they don't necessarily want to tackle it. They don't necessarily see it in an objective way. They see it kind of as a threat to their core, their unit. And so they're handled different ways, and in some cases, in a lot of cases, they're not taken seriously. So
go back, Heather, to the culture of military service, which is a sort of hypervigilant masculinity model, if you want to look at it that way. But they are aggressive. They're taught to be aggressive because they're, you know, many are sent to the front lines to, you know, to stand up for our nation's beliefs. And so there's a brotherhood, which you mentioned. So I got your back, you got mine kind of thing. And there's definitely, there's been a lot of movement, I think, in their culture lately because of our different, legislations lately about, there was a point when no one could say they were gay or homosexual or lesbian in the military. If they did, they were discharged, dishonorably discharged. So there's been a lot of legislation and work on that. And so I think with the increase of women being actually allowed to go to the front lines and work in the combat zones and to work on, there used to be all sorts of restrictions about women working on Navy ships or submarines, not being able to fly in the Air Force, the equipment. And so there's been a lot of change, and my experience in situations of a lot of change, people tend to dig in their heels and defend their territory.
Well, and especially in this area, because, you know, the military may be just copying what's happening in the general population. You know, women do get raped at an alarming rate. In non-military women. So, and I couldn't find, maybe, could you find any research on this? One of the questions that I had was, is there more sexual assault among the military than there is among the general population?
I think it would be if you did it at a per capita, or, you know, there's only 15% of women in the military. So the number of assaults that are reported, because remember, we all know that sexual violence and domestic violence are underreported. So, but once the 19,000 that were reported in 1 year come mostly, primarily from that 15% of female military personnel. So I think that's a pretty high rate. In 2011, there was 3,192 reported sexual assaults that were considered actionable by the military. However, I mean, there was 3,192 reported, only 1,518 were considered actionable. So that's less than half. And that was a decrease of 22% from 2010. And the prosecution rates are astoundingly low. In 2011, less than 8% of reported cases went to trial. And it says, of those cases, 191 subjects were convicted, resulting in 148 offenders serving jail sentences, and 122 of that 191 being discharged.
Wow.
And on top of that, they offered 10% of the perpetrators the ability to resign their position in the military rather than be court-martialed, which 10% of them agreed to do.
Yeah, well, gosh, I think I would agree to that, too.
Yeah, that sounds like an easy out, right?
Yeah, yeah. The situation that I encountered a lot when I was looking this up was a particular Army sergeant who kind of has become the face of this situation. But before I talk about that, I want to throw this out to our listeners. We'd love to hear from you. Please give us a call, 646-378-0430. And we'd love to hear your experiences, your comments about sexual violence against women in the U.S. military. Again, that's 646-378-0430. Now, the...
Wait, I have this from Open, Heather, so if people wanted to post a comment there, they're welcome to, and I'd like to add that we don't mind if you remain anonymous. There's no rule that says you have to identify who you are, so feel free to give us your opinion or tell us some story or raise your concerns along with us. We like that.
Yeah. Please do. We like it when people call in. The story that I encountered over and over is a story about U.S. Army Private Lavina Johnson. This story stems from, I think it's 2008, when she reported being sexually assaulted, and the response that she got was pretty grim, and she ended up committing suicide. At least that's what the military says. And although there are questions that some of private groups are have brought up about that, and so it's still in the news, even though it was several years ago that this 19-year-old killed herself. It was actually 2005, and she was in Iraq at the time. But she reported being sexually assaulted, and nothing really happened. Nothing really happened about it. So she did end up committing suicide, they said, although, as I said, lots of questions remain on that. And she's kind of the face of what can happen to a woman in the military. Do you think that it's any worse for a woman in the military because she is alone with her unit or her Army fellows?
I think she's in a more vulnerable position. Here we have culture and societal norms that are kind of clashing, right? Because you have the military, which says, be aggressive and assertive and protect, and I got your back, you got mine. And then we have our another sort of culture that says there's equality for women, and sometimes those don't always go well together. And with the only 15% of women in the military, they're far outnumbered. So there may be, battalions or groups or however they organize themselves within their ranks where there's only one or two females in those units. So there's a distinct disadvantage for the female to be a target of jokes and sexual harassment and, you know, those kinds of things because of the sheer numbers and because of that kind of macho, male, aggressive practices that are supported and actually, you know, rewarded and awarded.
Yeah. Well, and up until recently, nobody really talked about this as a huge issue in the military. It was alluded to, I think, in the media. But one of the stories that I encountered suggested that the military claps a pretty tight lid on information about sexual assault of women. This one website, and you know, I don't know how credible it is. It is called Toward Freedom: A Progressive Perspective on World Events Since 1952. So they're not exclusively about sexual violence or the military, even, but it's more of a journalist's kind of website. And so that, you know, take it for what you will. But there are allegations in this particular story that I've read that the Pentagon, it kind of tries to intimidate reporters a little bit and threatens to pull advertising from TV shows like 60 Minutes if they want to do any kind of big feature on this brutality in the military. And so, and I can certainly understand why the military would want to keep it quiet.
Certainly.
But,
well,
yeah.
The military is also concerned about their public image, as is everyone in this day and age. So everyone's got a brand, everyone's got a mission, and when things occur within the ranks of that organization, the tendency is to pull in and protect and keep it on the down low, because they don't want it. I can't remember where I read it, but women are far more likely to be assaulted by fellow armed services personnel than to die in conflict. So it's pretty dangerous for women. And so women that choose to participate in the military have to have a pretty thick skin in order to just get through their day. But then if something such as a traumatic sex rape or assault occurs, there's no room for them to react in a emotional way to that without further ridicule and harassment from the entire group. There may be one or two that would be supportive, but only in private, I would say, not publicly, because that would then damage their relationship. So it's a pretty sticky situation. I wanted to make sure our listeners know that there is a helpline that is offered by the Service Women's Action Network, and that number is 888-729-2089, and they do have a list of resources on their website, and it's very comprehensive. It's not talking only about military sexual trauma, which is a component of post-traumatic stress disorder. It talks about combat trauma as post-traumatic stress disorder, and it talks about legal rights and disability rights and housing rights and things like that, other legal issues. So it is a pretty comprehensive website. And I really recommend that people go check it out. And then you can follow them on Facebook or Twitter, all those sorts of things, so that you can keep up with the latest news. I want to say that just on March 13th, a Senate panel held a hearing on rape in the military, and they gave a stinging rebuke to the Defense Department. They're saying, the Senate is saying, you're making too little progress, you're failing to improve our justice system, and that their justice system is described by victims as slow and uncaring. So the panel heard a lot of testimony from multiple victims who said that this had happened to them and they felt unprotected and unserved. In fact, in the majority population, when there's been sexual violence and someone's convicted of it, the perpetrator is required not to come in contact with the victim. But in the military, it's possible that perpetrator may be transferred to the same location where the victim is working. excuse me.
Well,
so that is a really unacceptable practice that needs to be looked at. There has to be a way that they can provide a modicum of protection for sexual assault and violence survivors in the military without further traumatizing them.
Well, what Futures Without Violence, which is a wonderful resource for people, they speculate that abused women, you know, raped women in the military are sometimes fearful of reporting the incident at all because of the lack of confidentiality and privacy and limited victim services. So if you, it sounds to me, I have not been in the military, but it sounds to me like if you have the wherewithal and the strength to report it in the first place, you're kind of bucking the system there because nothing is private, nothing is confidential, and there are very limited services that you can go to get help if you're in the military and you're in that situation.
Right.
So it sounds like the whole environment is kind of like against or working against a woman who's trying to stand up for herself and report a rape.
And actually, who has a lot of affinity with her fellow or sister military people, because most people willingly join the service because of a desire to do well, to protect people. So instead of celebrating and embracing that sort of connection between however you identify gender-wise, they tend to work on a separate and a divided kind of atmosphere. I would like to bring up the fact that, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, she's a Democrat from New York, said, "All promises of zero tolerance from witnesses amount to nothing if a convening authority is the only individual who can decide whether to overturn a case or carry it forward." What she's referring to is that under military law, a commander who convenes a court-martial is known as the convening authority and has sole discretion to reduce or set aside guilty verdicts and sentences or to reverse a jury's verdict. So that seems to be a problem. There are no checks and balances in the military justice system. There's one person that has complete and final authority, no matter the steps taken up to that point. What do you think about that point of view, Heather?
Well, I think that that gives an awful lot of power to somebody who may or may not understand and take rape seriously. So I think that's a really dangerous situation. Of course, the military is kind of a body unto itself. Let's take a little break here, Deborah, and we're going to give a little shout out to your radio program that you have another one on Sunday nights. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
I do, and I would love to. And I would love to talk to survivors of military sexual trauma on my show if they were so inclined to raise their voice. My other radio show is called Self Empowerment Strategies, and that was developed in a different way to frame surviving violence. And we are trying to encourage positive outcomes and self-directed outcomes. Self-empowerment strategies is about changing social and cultural norms and making it okay to talk about any form of violence that you may have experienced. So please join me on Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio. My show is called Deborah Says. That's S-E-S, and that stands for Self-Empowerment Strategies. And my show is Pacific Time. So keep that in mind. And I would be thrilled to have you.
Okay, thanks, Deborah. Now let's kind of jump back to our conversation. You were saying how one individual could have such overwhelming power over, you know, a situation for a female soldier or a female military personnel. And one of the things that I noticed is that even if they do get some support from their commander. They're in with a lot of men, a lot of aggressive men, who the men in the military may have a different proportion of people who have an aggressive attitude toward women, but our culture as a whole, it's really, you were saying yesterday, it's a rape culture, Deborah.
Yeah, it really is. I'd just like to share some of the testimony in brief from survivors. A woman named Rebecca Havrilla, a former Army sergeant, told the panel she encountered a broken military criminal justice system after she was raped by another service member while serving in Afghanistan. She suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder and described how her case was eventually closed after senior commanders decided not to pursue charges. Bridget McCoy, a former Army specialist and a Persian Gulf War veteran, said she was raped when she was 18 at her first duty station. She did not report it. 3 years later, she was sexually harassed and she asked for an apology and to be removed from working directly with the offender. Here she says, "They did remove me from his team. His formal apology consisted of him driving by me on the base and saying, 'Sorry,' out of his open car door window." So the case, I mean, there's a lack of support, not only support, but respect. And, allowing people to have dignity in these situations. Although the official line is zero tolerance, it's not what their actions are, illustrating.
Yeah.
And it definitely sends the message to anybody, female or male, who has been sexually assaulted in the military or raped in the military, that it doesn't do any good to report. Their commanders won't believe them. In fact, I listened to one of the trailers for the Invisible War documentary, and that's kind of what they said, is that you don't get the support. And one of the survivors said, my point was, one of the survivors said that when she told her commander, he said to her, "You're the third woman this week that's come to me. What's going on? Are you women all in cahoots out there? You making this up?" So how is someone who's been traumatized by sexual violence, going to react to comments like that?
Yeah.
Are you dumbfounded?
I am. I am. one of the articles that I read, and I'll refer you to it again. It is a website called Toward Freedom, and it has an article called "Sexual Violence Against Women in the U.S. Military: The Search for Truth and Justice." And again, take everything on the internet with a grain of salt, because anybody can post anything. You know that. However, this particular article quotes a soldier, and they even name him, so that tends to give it a little bit more credibility. But he said that the reason that rape in the military is going up so high is because men know they can get away with it. They know they can get away with it. And the same soldier says that, especially in a war zone, they'll say, "You're going to be dead tomorrow. Raping you is just the cost of war. We'll just chalk it up to unsafe security."
Right, and there's a kind of a prevailing attitude that you signed up for this.
Yep. As if, the military offers a good economic base for a lot, and a career base for a lot of people, women included. And Violence Against Women in the Military is an organization that has talked a little bit about this, and they said that, compared to traditional female occupations with few benefits and little room to move up, positions for women in the military are pretty secure. But when sexual violence happens, not only do the victims of the violence seem to not see any justice, you know, carried out against the perpetrators, but they also tend to be the ones that are penalized for coming forward. Some are demoted, they're relocated, and some are just passed over for promotion, and all three of those mean a loss of economic security, which is one of the reasons that women go into the military. One of the reasons a lot of people go into the military, male or female, is
absolutely
to get some
that's
sort of
thought pattern for all survivors of violence is that I can't leave, or I can't report, or I don't want to bring attention to this because of the impact on the entire rest of my life. You know, it's not simply a matter between two people. It's not something that happens behind closed doors and then goes away. It goes on and on and on, and it lives in your life, and it impacts the rest of your life. So it is a difficult situation to find yourself in, to report or not to report, particularly in a system such as the military. And I kind of wanted, Heather, to compare this to recently in the last 5 or 10 years, our police and law enforcement agencies in the state of Washington had to come up with a policy that provided for a unbiased, independent law enforcement system to come in and adjudicate violence perpetuated by the law enforcement officers. And so when I was reading about Senator Gillibrand, her comments, I'm thinking that's what they need to do in the military as well. Because the system, the way it's set up right now, is not working. In fact, it protects abusers and it penalizes survivors.
Mm. Well, and there's a lot of cost involved to being a victim of sexual assault, especially in the military. As we just talked about, you can see a career trajectory come to a squealing halt, but there's also financial and emotional costs of being sexually assaulted in the military. In the military, if they choose to leave the military, they're responsible for all their medical care, including forensic exams and any testing, follow-up visits, and of course, as with any violence against women, there's often an emotional consequence. There's PTSD, depression, anxiety, missed work, lost productivity. So that also is bad for overall economic security and for their career trajectory. And if they are going through that while they're in the military, it puts everybody at risk.
I actually have a cost associated to military spending. The VA spends approximately $10,880 on health care costs per military sexual assault survivor. Adjusting for inflation, this means that in 2010 alone, the VA spent almost $872 million on sexual assault-related health care expenditures.
Mm.
Is that incredible or not?
Well, is that like a drop in the bucket for the military, though?
Well, but still, how much that could fund the social services.
yeah, that's true. That's true.
Budget for a year. You know, that
yeah.
is a lot of money. And if there was no military sexual assault behavior, we wouldn't be having this. In 2009, 65,000 plus patients received at least one instance of outpatient care for military sexual trauma-related condition at VHA facilities.
Wow.
60% were women and 40% were men. 65,000 in 2009. After,
and it's
you
going
know,
up.
Yeah. And only 19,000 reported.
Well, did you get a sense from any of the research you did that the military is really, you know, in a yank about trying to take care of this problem? Because I didn't.
Well, I know that they've been directed to by the commander-in-chief, which is the president, I think even under George Bush, too. There was some, hearings on this sort of thing. It's not that new. It's been going on for a long time. So I think the Senate committee that just had this hearing was pretty clear that they need to address sexual assault in the military. I think, you know, as more females in the military are promoted, this could be a good thing. This could have an impact on this sort of situation. And I'm not saying that the military is, you know, ill-intentioned. I'm not saying that at all. But
and we're
I
not
think,
saying that the military is not a good institution.
Absolutely.
You know,
that
I mean,
necessary, and that I don't appreciate all that they do for us as United States citizens, because I do. I think it's very important, but at the same time, I hate to see people within that system suffering such a high rate of violence from their coworkers, because that's basically what it is. It's workplace environment, and that's not acceptable in the nonprofit world. It shouldn't be acceptable in our, our national institutions and really shrines. Isn't the military kind of like a shrine?
Yeah.
I mean, they really do reward and award acts of heroism all the time. So it would be nice then if someone, I mean, you could be getting the highest, the purple heart, and you might still be a sexual predator.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and some of this, I mean, maybe I'm digging a little too deep here, but I'm old enough to remember the huge controversy about having women in the military at all.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's taken 25, 30 years before, you know, since for our country to really become accustomed to having women in the military. And even now, there's a lot of people that kind of resent women in the military. I've heard people say things like, "Yeah, well, they don't have to pass the same standards. They get the easier jobs." Da, 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 da. Well, I'm not in the military, but I've, you know, had a father. I come from a military family, and I'm not so convinced that women have an easier time, you know, with their military chores and their military qualifications. But
and a lot of that, Heather, was really not strictly their choice. It was kind of mandated by the military regulations. There is a fact sheet on the Service Women's Action Network website. It's called Major Moments in Women's Military Service. And just to let the listening public know, the first Army Nurse Corps was established in 1901. So that's a long time ago. In World War II, they had over 350,000 uniformed women serving.
Yeah.
And but they've got some statistics down here later. Let me go down here. In 1953, Barbara O. Barnwell was the first female U.S. Marine to be awarded the Navy and Marine Corps Medal for heroism.
Well, there's been women in the military even in the Civil War.
Vietnam.
Yeah, but there have been women serving in the military even in the Civil War, you know, and I suspect that, you know, if we did a little research, we'd find that it's been going on since before then.
In 1978, they amended the 1948 Integration Act, which amended to allow women permanent positions in non-combatant ships and temporary assignment to combatant ships.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when they, in 1978, is when they could first then start working on Navy ships.
Yeah.
1981, exempting women from registering for the Military Selective Service was found to be constitutional and used to support women's exclusion from combat.
And, of course, along with that exclusion, there were dangers because women, especially the nurses, were in combat areas.
Yep.
And yet they couldn't, they didn't have the military training. They didn't, I believe they weren't even allowed to carry weapons with them.
Yeah, so they call that a risk rule, and that was developed in 1988. And in 1991, the ban on women serving aboard combat aircraft engaged in combat missions was just lifted. That was only in 1991.
Yeah. Yeah. See, we don't have a long history of accepting women in the military, at least accepting them as equal contributors. So I'm wondering if some of that attitude is just kind of so ingrained in our culture that a lot of this is seen as justifiable. A lot of this attacking women is seen as justifiable because they're kind of poking their nose in where they don't belong.
Well, and it definitely fits with the whole Big Brother scenario. It's the male is the protector.
Mm-hmm.
I need to take care of you. And if I have females in my unit, then I'm going to be more worried about them than I am my brothers or myself.
No.
So that's a negative to being female because you're a lot of trouble, you know.
And you take attention away from the big guys.
So let's take
a little break here momentarily, Deborah, and I want to talk a little bit about the organization that I helped found called Heal Everywhere. You can access us on Facebook. We'd love for you to do that. One of our big activities, we, of course, try to help women who have survived domestic violence, and they're out there trying to create a life and make their life as best as they can after the trauma of domestic violence. And one of the things that we've had a lot of success with is what we call DV Doggy. It's a program of service animals, service dogs, for women who have been traumatized by abuse, such as PTSD. The Americans with Disabilities Act is the federal regulation that mandates when you qualify for a service dog. And basically, if you have acute anxiety, chronic depression, or post-traumatic stress disorder, and having a service animal can help you carry out your day-to-day functions, such as getting out of the house or finding your car in a parking lot when your cognition has been damaged and you can't do it yourself. There's all sorts of reasons that a dog can be trained to help you, and we've had some pretty good luck with that. So that's one of our major programs, and we would love for you to find out more, maybe help us, and you can access us on Facebook. So,
I love hearing about Heal, and I particularly love the DV Doggy that I know well.
Yes.
I wanted to say, too, that if our listeners wanted to learn more about you and Connie Sue and I, they could visit our website, and our website is www.3women3ways.com, and that's the number 3. So also, we are located on Facebook and Twitter, if you'd like to follow us in those ways. We'd love to have you join us there.
Always fun. And if you don't have a computer, I mean, sometimes I think we forget that some people still don't have access to a computer on a daily basis. Don't forget you can access it at the library. I had a power outage last week, and so I went to the library and used their computer. And, you know, it's a wonderful service at the library. So if you don't have your own computer or you don't have access to it or if yours broke like mine recently did, just head over to the library and you can access their computer.
I want to remind our listeners that there is a helpline for legal and social service referrals relating to military stress trauma and all things like that, and the number is 888-729-2089, and that is staffed by Service Women's Action Network. And I was reading their, what was I looking at? I was reading their board of directors and their advisory board, and they really have some extremely well-connected representation across the whole sector, both social service and also legal representation. So it's a very comprehensive website and organization, and I highly support you checking them out. Their website is servicewomen.org. And I was just going to, we always do like to leave our listeners with resources. So from the Service Women's resource page, I can tell you a little bit more about their helpline, they call it. It provides referrals for supportive services regarding counseling, mental health, housing assistance, VA benefits, domestic violence, and LGBT issues. They also provide legal referrals and answers, the basic legal inquiries related to family court, VA appeals, discharge upgrades and record correction, involuntary separation, EO complaints and reprisal grievances, sexual assault victim rights, limited case management, and basic information about VA benefits and claim procedures. And that's what I mean when I say they're very comprehensive in providing assistance and referral to anybody who's been involved in the military service. So,
and it's so good to have those resources, to know them. I mean, when you're just hearing a resource, you kind of think, yeah, that's good to have resources. But, boy, when you need some assistance, those organizations are on the ball. They know what they're talking about. They can really give you good help. So, that's one of the reasons, as you mentioned, Deborah, that we like to leave resources. Maybe you don't need them right this second, but you'll remember if this need arises for you that there are some organizations or some people out there that can give you a hand.
Go ahead.
I keep wanting to go back to this whole issue of just the climate in the military. I mean, it's a conundrum. I'm not criticizing the military or military men for being aggressive. That's what we want in a soldier. That's what we want, you know, in our military. But how can we figure out how to balance the aggressiveness that we want in a military person with the lack of aggressiveness we want in a coworker or a partner? We didn't really talk about it much, but, you know, assault on military bases, assault of families of military veterans, hugely high proportion of violence there, you know, domestic violence as well as, you know, rape and whatever. So it's important, I think, that we recognize that, you know, there is this climate of violence. And maybe, you know, is it asking too much to say, yeah, we want you to be violent and aggressive in this situation, but then come home and be a sweet teddy bear, or, you know, be nice with your military coworkers, or don't see that woman as a sexual object, even though that's the way you've been raised, is to see a woman as a sexual object. Are we asking too much here? And if so, then how do we address the problem?
I think we could be asking too much, but the point is that we need to ask them, they need to be operating at an ethical level, because our military people are actually role models for our young, you know, our younger generation. And so they need to remember that everything they do is seen and, you know, analyzed by other people, and they're used as role models. And I think that I think that's why I'm so supportive of services for veterans after they come home. I mean, they develop post-traumatic stress disorder as a diagnosis after our Vietnam veterans came home. And I think because it was the 70s where we questioned everything, you know, versus World War II where nobody questioned anything, you know, we just accepted authority and moved forward with it. But in the 60s and 70s, we kind of said, hey, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you a question.
remember the bumper sticker, question authority?
right. That's what I'm talking about. So
yeah.
It kind of opens up the conversation about what was it you really experienced, and why are you having night terrors and night sweats, and why are you depressed? There's a reason for it. So let's look at it. I did want to share what happened to a male survivor, and he shared his story in the recent hearing. Brian Lewis, former third-class petty officer in the Navy and the first man to ever testify before the Senate on military sexual assault, said he was forced out of the service after reporting his attacker. He said, in 2000, I was raped by a superior non-commissioned officer. I was ordered by my command not to report this crime to the Naval Criminal Investigative Service. After my command learned of this crime, I was misdiagnosed as having a personality disorder, and I was discharged in 2001.
Oof.
That's harsh. That's a message, and that's going to take a little bit of time to process that and work through that, you know, that you would expect treat someone like that who all they did was report a violation of sexual violence that happened. I mean, not only, but it's a huge thing to report that, but to actually remove the, you know, them from the service. And does that really silence him? Evidently, it didn't silence Brian Lewis.
Yeah.
Because he's talking about it, and bless him. So bless him.
Yeah, so much for that plan.
who came forward and talked about this experience, because we need to know about it, right? We need to know about it, or change will never happen.
Well, and we need to know about it because we need to make sure that we are aware of it, that we can tell people about it, and that we can work out strategies for dealing with it or correcting it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that, you know, as is most usually the case with most of these social issues, get it out in the air, get it out in the open, and then we can work on solving it and get people aware that it actually is a problem.
Yeah.
And, of course, with sexual assault, you know, traditionally people didn't want to prosecute. They didn't want to go forward because they knew that it would be more of a trial for them, worse for them to keep going through. And hopefully we are now starting to really move away from that thinking and starting to demand some accountability and some processes and some ways to deal with this kind of trauma in someone's life.
You know, also I think an impact is that, in majority culture, we want to try to protect the confidentiality of survivors and victims.
Okay.
But with the military system, you don't really have that same level of confidentiality practice. So if it's in your file, everybody above you knows about it. And if they transfer you, then everybody above you there knows about you and what you've done with your career in the military. So there's you know, continued exposure and possibility for humiliation and mistreatment as you, you know, if you stay in the military. And that's hard to deal with.
Yeah.
You're never going to heal from it if that's the case.
Well, and not only that, but, you know, as we were saying before, so much is tied in with that. Your career trajectory. I mean, if you experience trauma or whatever in civilian life, you can just quit your job. You can move forward. I'm not saying that that's an easy thing to do, but I'm saying it is possible. When you're in the military, you can't just quit the military. I mean, you can, but there goes your career trajectory. There goes, you know, your hopes about, you know, what you're going to do when you leave the military, what your career path is going to be. It impacts all of that.
Definitely. I mean, you're right. You don't just walk away from the military. If you don't show up for work one day, they call it AWOL, which is absent without leave, and that's a court-martial.
Yes.
If you're, you know, they can be pretty tough about those things. It's you're AWOL, and if you don't go through, if you are AWOL, they want to court-martial and put you in the brig. I think that's what they call it. And they might say, okay, well, I'll work with you to get you out, but you have to have an extremely compelling reason if you're the one suggesting it.
Yeah. Yeah,
I don't like it here anymore. They don't care about that.
Well, we were talking a little bit earlier this week about the UN actions that have been taken and studies and whatever. You want to talk a little bit about the, 57, number 57, UN?
Yes, I was excited about that. The Commission on the Status of Women, it's a United Nations body of an area of concern, and they met from March 4th through March 15th in New York City, and it was an international experience. And what they're working on, their theme this year is ending violence against women. How appropriate for you and I, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah,
that's what we do. We like that. So we're glad they're on our page with us, right, Heather?
Absolutely, absolutely. And actually,
it on the 15th. Yeah, so tell us what you found in your research about their statement.
Well, I think that one of the most significant things is that the UN was able to pass that plan despite conservative religious factions that were fighting against it, the Muslims, Roman Catholics, and, you know, they were able to approve this UN blueprint to combat violence against women and girls, even though we traditionally think that these conservative religious factions are not supporting that. And in fact, they didn't support it a lot, but they were able to still get this mandate, this plan to be adopted by the UN despite that. And I think that that's really bodes well for, you know, different opinions about women and women's roles. I think even in some of the most conservative religious areas, it's starting to lighten up a little bit, and I think that this plan is evidence of that, you know, that all of these different religious factions can object to it, but still, you know, acknowledge the importance of this plan to combat violence against women. So I'm really psyched about it.
Appreciate you bringing this up, Heather, because even the naming of a new pope has impact on women across the world. This is a global issue, and it impacts us in every aspect of our life, from, you know, your intellect, your emotions, your physical body. But I just, that's one of the reasons why I do this work and why I'm trying to find other ways, you know, keep the existing systems in place. Of course, they're important and necessary, but there must be other ways for us to change these social and cultural norms that perpetuate violence against women. And the Pope, I guess, already has been quoted in some news articles as saying he's not sure about the same-sex marriage issue. And, I mean, the Catholic Church has been pretty outspoken about, we don't, marriage is between a man and a woman thing. And so already he's just been a pope for a week.
Yeah.
And he's already saying things that are impacting people's lives. So, you know, it's important for us to pay attention to these things.
It is. And it does take, sometimes it gets a little frustrating for me at how long it takes to have change happen. But the point is if we don't keep working, people will forget about it, and that change will not happen, even if it takes 20 years.
That's right. And
so
I like that, because I think we're one of the few shows that will talk about violence against women. And that's not to be persnickety or exclude men, because, you know, but we're saying women are majorly impacted by violence. We are... just being born a woman makes us vulnerable to violence in some form or another. And it's throughout our entire life.
Yeah.
Just the one.
You know, my kids and I were laughing because we were in a restaurant and we noticed that, you know, several times there were women that got up to go to the bathroom, and especially the older women would go in pairs. And my kids said, why on earth would they do that? And I said, because it harkens back to when it wasn't safe for a woman to be alone, even going to the restroom.
Well, and it still is not safe. I mean, we don't let I have grandchildren, we don't let them go to the bathroom without an adult.
Yes, absolutely.
That's the way it is for us women. We're always kind of hyper-vigilant about those situations, and that's, from being born a woman. So
you know that the possibility is always out there that you can be hurt.
Yeah.
Deborah, look at our time. I don't know where the time went today, but do you have a quote for us?
I'm talking. Can you tell? Well, I do have a quote, Heather, if you want me to share that. I found one, and it's pretty meaningful. It's by Joy Harjo. She was born in 1951. She says, the woman hanging from the 13th floor window on the east side of Chicago is not alone. She is all the women of that apartment building who stand watching her, watching themselves. So we are all part of this together. We're interconnected. What happens to one woman, one man, one child affects us all.
And we're here, and we're going to talk about it. We are three women, three ways.
And because we're three divas.
Yes. Join us next week, please,
yes,
on Three Women, Three Ways. And thanks for joining us today.